Hey, y'all. Welcome back to Erase the State. Matty K here, as always. Still missing Mikey Two Names. He's somewhere in Belize, I think, living the dream with his hot Brazilian wife on the beaches of Central and South America. But with me this week is the one and only Chronic of Agora Brewing. Chronic, what's happening, man?
Oh, not a lot. Just living the life here and enjoying my new blog that I started.
Cool. So why don't you? Why don't you tell us a little bit about the blog?
Okay. So basically, I kind of got into a mode where I realized I felt like I had a lot to say regarding, you know, the whole libertarian message and a few things that I might nitpick here and there. Basically, just me screaming in my car at listening to Tom Woods and Dave Smith, like, "Oh, you're missing this point," and "Oh man, you know, this one you're not really right on." So, you know, I want to keep it mostly on the blog, but anybody who's been on there will see I've got my first episode of an interview series down with Jared with Biting Bullet.
So, oh, nice.
If anybody wants to check that out, feel free. It's agorabrewing.home.blog. So that's what I'm into right now.
Cool. So I guess before we get too deep off in the weeds here, let's at least for my benefit, and I know some of my friends' benefits, you know, we're all, or a lot of us, are libertarians and anarchists or anarcho-libertarians or whatever. They're different. They're the same. Just depends on who you ask, right? So, right. Philosophically, I'm an anarchist. Uh-huh. How does that differ from agorism? And how do you even say that shit?
Well, Sam Konkin said agorism, but okay. I don't think it matters really.
It doesn't roll off the tongue as easy as agorism. So,
right. Well, yeah, it's based on the Greek word agora, which basically just means market. And you can infer a lot from that. So it's the ideology of the market, right? But basically what happened is back in the 70s when the Libertarian Party was created, Sam Konkin was one of those guys who was like, if you're gonna create change, like if you're gonna get rid of the state, then you shouldn't participate in the state. So, he was against voting. He was against the Libertarian Party as a concept, really. And so one of his big, breakaways from Murray Rothbard was to say, no, what we should be doing is focusing on subversion to the state. Like it, you know, one of his basic map for how we get to a stateless society was that eventually what would happen is you're going to have these cities cropping up called agorist cities, and they're going to ultimately have private defense companies who kick out the state police force, right? So there's obviously the defense aspect there, but there's also, in my opinion, a lot of other ways that we can subvert the state. So for one, I'm a home brewer, and the way I look at it, the state is – they never actually gave up on prohibition, right? So right. They've got control of the whole, you know, licensing apparatus and everything else, and I'm saying, well – I'm just going to make this thing in my kitchen, you know, just like a regular old chef would do. And I'm going to share it with my friends. And if there happens to be a $20 bill left on the counter when they leave, you know, nobody's got to know about it. Sure. And that's, you know, that's basically what agorism comes down to, is starving the state of its taxes.
Okay. So I don't know. I don't know. Maybe I don't think as nuanced as a lot of people do maybe. So, I mean, how does ideal agorism differ from a dude selling weed on the corner? Like, is that the same thing?
That would be agorism. The idea here is that you have people who do agorism, like my mom might have a garage sale, and she's definitely not an anarchist, and I guarantee you she's not paying taxes on that. But agorism is the idea that we're going to make anti-state action explicit. So I'm trying to show people, like, hey, you know, you've got this inconsistency. If, you know, you support taxes in all these ways, but like you would never, you know, call a cop down to somebody's garage sale and say, hey, they're just taking cash for stuff. What? There's something wrong with that. No, that's totally normal. You would never question it. And so, drug dealing and you know, a lot of really scary black market stuff, that does count. But my point to try to emphasize with people is that it's really not about drugs and
I just use that as like the extreme example. Topic,
right? Yeah, for sure. But that is where people's heads go, you know? Yeah. So it's really, it's about taking the freedom that you have right now and not worrying about, you know, we're not going to save it. We're not going to sit here and talk about anarchy and save it for the voting booth. We're going to actually go out and do it. And eventually they're going to have to clamp down on us because we're generating revenue that they don't have access to. And, you know, I've said this in the Discord channel with Biting the Bullet before. I may be the most Boogaloo enthusiast here, even though I'm not posting a whole lot of memes, because I do think that it is going to come down to violence. I mean, you're going to have these cities kick the state out, and you know, the state's going to fight. I don't think they'll do it very effectively. I mean, you remember in you know, even Murray Rothbard would say the state's not going to nuke its own soil, because that would be like the farmer just destroying his own property. You know, it's not going to happen. So I think the fight might be a little easier than we expect.
Hopefully, anyway. I don't know if I'm a Boogaloo enthusiast or a Burlington Coat Factory employee, Christmas party enthusiast, but I do think it's going to come down to something like that. And I think it's going to be hard even for the people who have properly prepared for that. And I certainly have not. I've got, you know, plenty of guns and ammo, but food and water and all that good stuff is still...
What, you're not rotating 5 different gas cans?
Unfortunately not. Although we usually do. I mean, I live here on the Gulf Coast, so, you know, I'm not sure where you're at, but it's always hurricane country, it seems, or hurricane time. So we've always got gas somewhere laying around and gallons of water and like 30 pounds of rice and beans and sardines and all that. So we're usually okay.
Yeah, I'm just smack dab in the middle of flyover country here. Nothing to see.
Hurricane country. I mean, tornado country.
Tornado country, yes.
So, yeah, it's just a brief aside here. It's funny, when we moved into our new neighborhood like 3 years ago, right before whatever the last hurricane was that fucked up Houston. And, you know, we're relatively ready to go every summer. We just kind of like, we don't say anything. We just start keeping extra shit just in case, you know. And it was like 3 days after the storm hit, and Houston is still like, you know, 30 feet underwater. And people in the neighborhood Facebook group are like, oh, do you think the store's going to open? Like, we're out of bread. I'm like, fuck no, dude. You're fucked. Sorry. I don't know what to tell you.
Right.
So
yeah, I know who's a Jack Spierko with the Survival Podcast. Mm-hmm. He's always talking about getting food grade buckets that you can just get for free at Walmart out of the deli. And you put, I think, what do? You put a plastic bag down in there, and you've got like rice, beans, everything you need, you know, and you could set yourself up to where you've got like 3 months worth of food just stashed in your basement.
Yeah, when you buy bulk, I mean, if you have a, you know, Costco membership or a Sam's membership, or even if you're just buying store brand food, you know, rice and beans and shit like that from the store, whatever your local grocery store is, it's pretty cheap. And yeah, if you can get I mean, even if you're buying the buckets, it's not that expensive. But yeah, you can get them free from the deli. They're just going to throw them out. And then, you know, eBay has 3, 6, or 9 mil, what is it, like Mylar or whatever, you know, heat sealable bags that you can, you know, pre-prep, you know, a pound at a time or 3 pounds at a time, whatever it is, and stuff it in a bucket and put it in the bottom of your pantry and, you know, wait till the shit hits the fan. So, not that I've looked into any of this at all, but.
Yeah. There's a lot to learn. Well, and you know, what's funny about that is that's really what people did in the, you know, 100 years ago during the Great Depression. That's how they survived it, is that this was just normal. And then, you know, the low interest rates and high inflation drove us into not giving a crap anymore about that kind of thing. So
sure. Well, but speaking of
it, really does. It leads into another point about agorism.
Sure.
Where, you know, the decreased dependency, if you're prepared, you're less likely to be dependent on the state. And weathering those kinds of storms, I think, is kind of a key way to, you know, If you're staying afloat, that's the best revenge, right? Living the good life is the best revenge.
Sure.
Something like that.
Yeah, I would agree. So is there, you know, I think everyone's goal, whether we consider ourselves agorists or anarchists or libertarians or whatever, is at least to increase liberty by taking down the machine that is the federal government, right? At least in our little corner of the world over here. So is there some critical mass that has to be reached in your opinion before that happens? If you're looking at purely agoristic means of taking down the state, what is that critical mass? You know, how many people have to be doing this? How many tax dollars do we have to starve the state of before things start to change? Do you have an opinion on that?
I don't have a number. I know Sam had you know, sort of a gradients of agorism, stages zero through either four or five. I can't remember, but I had a bit of trouble when I was skimming trying to find it again. But basically, he says once you get to the point that you actually have agorist cities that are able to keep the state at bay, and it's not just a constant, you know, fight every day, that's kind of when you say, all right, this is going to work out. And that's more like stage four agorism is what he would call it. You know, there may be sort of bubbles popping up here and there that may, you know, go back down if the state clamps down. But it is a gradual process. I think personally, and the reason I had Jared on to talk about voting was kind of, and I explained this in my post a little bit more what my position is, but I do think we're a little bit closer than people realize. Because we're at this point in history when you've got the two parties and this public that sees the political system producing a fight between Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton, and we got Donald Trump.
Right.
So people are getting pretty disenfranchised at this point and just distrusting authority. And it was crazy. I mean, just today I got into a talk with a guy, one of my coworkers, and found out that several of the people I work with are like looking up CIA conspiracy theories and everything else. And I'm like,
all right,
hold on. Like almost everyone, I would say more than half of the people I work with are gun enthusiasts and definitely not, you know, not the progressive type. They're not, it's actually very surprising. And my, you know, they're very, like I said, they're very distrusting. When I point out something that the cops did, like the thing in Florida last week, people are ready to hear it, you know. And I pointed out, you know, I pointed out a gun statistic about the fact that school shootings include a guy committing suicide at 1 a.m, you know. And that was readily received. So it just kind of blew my mind. And I think, you know, going back to the voting thing, I do think that we've got a chance here. And, you know, maybe I'm a little more optimistic on voting per se now because of the timing. But I do also think, you know, if you got a printer, go print off Anatomy of the State and start leaving it places. I bet more people are going to read it than you would realize.
Yeah, I've certainly considered doing stuff like that, especially with, I mean, I don't know if you would consider this to be in the vein of agorism, but I think it, you know, as the uninitiated sitting here on the other end of the microphone, I think it probably falls under that category. But, you know, people that are, they talk about downloading all the files from Deterrence Dispensed or whatever and leaving USB drives, you know, just random places, like go to the library and leave a handful.
Yeah, gun manufacturer is the next big one on my list for favorite agorist things.
Sure.
But yeah, I mean, education is a big was a big facet for Sam, which is funny because everyone sees the LP as a vessel for education. And so when he railed against it, I'm just sitting here like, so I get it, but also isn't it like the biggest thing that's drawing publicity to the word libertarian? Like it kind of makes sense to get involved in that to keep the message the message. But yeah, so like leaving copies of Anatomy of the State around, that would be a big time agorist thing. I mean, it doesn't cost that much. It's subversive as hell, and it's not participating in the political system. So it's definitely a agorist in that respect.
Yeah, yeah. And to get back to the voting thing, I mean, you know, very recently, I was still just like your basic neocon or whatever. You know, we got to go kill them over there, so they're not killing us over here. You know. Born and raised a Republican, just by virtue of my parents. And once I made the switch to realize that I was actually a libertarian, and then, you know, like 6 minutes later, and one good shit, you know, I realized I was an anarchist. I decided I'm not going to vote anymore. Right. So I voted in the last presidential election. And I say I voted, I think I pulled the R handle for a couple of people just so a Democrat wouldn't get it. like the protest type vote, right? And then I wrote in, I think I mentioned this on probably the last podcast that we recorded, but I wrote in whatever fucking jackleg, Evan McMullen or whatever, the CIA plant that was the write-in candidate. More just to, I mean, we live in Texas, right? So it's safe. You know, Donald Trump was going to win. I didn't have to vote for Hillary. It was more of just like a protest vote. I wanted that statistic to show up that I voted for somebody else. And I wasn't impressed with the Weld Johnson ticket or Johnson Weld ticket. So, like just morally in my soul, I couldn't pull the handle for the L time for the L team that time.
I think for me, it would be about the same. It's kind of it's a moral thing when, and this isn't particularly agorist. I think this is when they had the voluntarist branch break off. I forget the names. It might've been Watner, but, you had a lot of people saying, well, look, voting is, you know, you can make the Spooner argument that you could vote defensively, but really what you do is attempt to impose your will on everyone else. And maybe you're defending yourself from one person who's voting against you, but there's collateral damage of everyone else in the society, right? And so it's kind of... It breaks away from the normal NAP standards that we have, unfortunately. So that's what it comes down to for me. And I still have that sense in me that's like, yeah, I really shouldn't be doing the thing that is the opposite of what my ideals are. And, you know, even if I'm more hopeful for, you know, the Hornberger race and things like that and the timing, like I said, it just I may still not vote myself if I do. I may write in nobody, you know what I mean? And that was Sam Konkin even said in his book, you know, one of the biggest things you can do is put a bumper sticker on your car that says vote for nobody, right? Giant Meteor 2020.
Right.
Well,
that's kind of where I was getting with this, right? So I had my little Republican protest vote the last time around, right? Just cause fuck Donald Trump and fuck Hillary Clinton. But you know, fast forward to the last midterm and I didn't vote. So like the one set of friends who's yelling at me because I'm not going to vote for Donald Trump. And I said, look, Donald Trump is fucking safe. We live in Texas. It's like the reddest state right in the South. Like he's fine. So my vote's not going to fucking matter. Enough of you dumbasses are going to vote for him. He's going to win. So fast forward to the midterm, same group of friends were like, what the fuck? You have to vote. I'm like, no, the people who are going to win are going to win. Like Ted Cruz is still going to be our dipshit fucking senator, whether I vote or not, right? Like I'm one person and there's like a handful of my friends who are not going to vote. So we're not going to swing an election over to the fucking Democrats or Beto or whoever the fuck it ran. but now I'm more along the line of like, and I say this, but we just had some amendments come up in the state. And I told myself I was going to like at least look into them and go vote. Cause I don't feel bad about, I see both sides of that Spoonerist argument, right? Like, I'm okay with defensive voting when it comes to changing the supposed written law that we have in place that may be oppressive to us, right? So if I can vote for an amendment that would change the Constitution of Texas that says I have more freedom and my neighbors have more freedom to do something or to further restrict the state, I'm okay with voting for that. When it comes to actually voting for a person, I'm probably not going to vote for them. Now, all that being said, I did recently just join the LP Texas and national parties to support Jacob Hornberger. So I'm at least going to vote for him in the primaries. I will probably vote for him in the presidential election should he get the nomination, just because he ain't going to fucking win. So well, Jacob Hornberger, if you listen to this, sorry, but you're not going to win. So the Libertarians are not going to win an election, at least not that large of an election. So for me, again, that's like a protest, just middle finger. And at least, I mean, he lines up with basically all of my positions. It's just that he describes himself as a minarchist and believes that a state should exist. So, I mean, I'm sympathetic to his views. I understand that he's, but at the end of the day, the closest thing we're going to get to Ron Paul without Ron Paul running again. So I'm okay with supporting him.
Yeah, I get that. No, but I just remembered the point that I was going to make regarding the write-in vote. So whether it's a libertarian or a write-in, I don't know if you remember, was it the first Bush Jr. or his re-election campaign when I think they were on the news, it showed up. And this is the only reason I know about it because I was like, I don't know, like grade school at the time. But on the news, more people voted for Mickey Mouse than anybody else, right? And so that showed up on the news. So what I'm saying is, if we get vote for nobody and all these third party protest votes, they're going to have to say something about it, right? I mean, the only reason it doesn't show up in the last couple elections that 63 or whatever percent of Americans don't vote at all, which should delegitimize the entire thing, in my opinion. The only reason that doesn't show up is because nobody's writing a name in. They're just staying home. And if they stay home, people go, well, you stayed home, your fault. You know, but if we go out and we actually say, you know what, Mickey Mouse, screw you.
Yeah.
You got to say something about it. On the news,
I think that's been the case since, you know, write-in candidates have been tracked and Mickey Mouse has been a thing, that, that Mickey Mouse tends to get the most votes of all non-balloted write-in candidates, and even sometimes beats some of the smaller party candidates that are on the ballot. Mickey Mouse wins the small race elections, which is fucking hilarious. And since you've confirmed that you're much younger than me, and I have a fuck ton of gray hair, so I don't know if you've ever seen the movie Brewster's Millions, but
not that one.
So yeah, so I would go check it out. And to any of our listeners who have not seen it, I highly recommend it. Richard Pryor's a fucking comedic genius, and John Candy's in it. So it's a guy, just briefly, and I'm not going to give anything away here, but a guy inherits this money, and he has to spend it all without owning anything at the end. And he gets this extra Benny, right? If he does this, completes these tasks. So he decides to run for political office, but he does it, or people I think want him to run is what happens. So what he does is, because he doesn't want to hold office like for mayor or governor or whatever the bullshit office is, he decides to like have it run his whole campaign on vote none of the above. But none of the above fucking wins. And it's all this like popularity contest and who can spend the most money on who. And it's just kind of like this unintentional jab at what the actual political process is and how things work. So I just think it's funny. So go check it out. It's really good.
That's awesome. You know what? Side note to that, kind of related. I actually used to work with a guy who became the mayor of a small town near here. And he said he didn't even run. People just voted and then he had to do it. That's he was like, awesome. Okay, yeah. And all he does is show up, do some like landscaping jobs or whatever little stuff they're trying to get him to do, and then sit around and listen to all the board members or whoever they are bitch.
Yeah,
and he's awesome. Like, you guys won't let me get anything done.
You know, I've often thought of running for office just to see how far I could make it, like running a campaign just like as me and like not dressing anything up and just telling people to go fuck themselves and like what's really going on, like what I actually think.
Tell you what, I think if you took Jared's latest rant on biting the bullet, you could probably win a few elections with that.
Yeah, you know, I might have to run as a Democrat though, because I'm like, you know, Jared's awesome and he's very anti-cop, and I'm like recently like extremely anti-cop to the point where I'm very close to like just posting on Twitter that we should start shooting back. I've kind of veiled some of those tweets. And
I was gonna say careful saying that.
Yeah, I know. So I'm saying it here, but surprise, like there's 80 listeners, so whatever. But yeah, so I don't know if that would get me elected. Maybe in the Democrat Party. I don't know. We'll have to test that out one day.
I don't know. I mean, Antifa might be your fan or not. You know what I mean? I said Antifa could be your fan or not.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I mean, hey, whoever wants to vote for me, I'll take whatever support they're willing to give.
The Nick Sarwark plan?
Yeah, either way. Yeah, with Hitler, just, you know, David all Duke, whatever. As long as they have the right letter behind their name, that's fine.
Who cares who votes for us?
Yeah, exactly. Just put me in office.
Yep. Beautiful. All right, sorry, go ahead.
No. So I kind of derailed everything. I don't know where we're gonna go next, but let's get back to the brewing aspect. So
sure. Yeah.
So you're a home brewer. How did you get into this?
I'm trying to remember actually. The first thing that I can remember at the moment was I was looking up how to make mead. I think I had just looked around and it turns out that mead is the easiest to brew. So for anyone who doesn't know, that is honey wine. Think wine, but instead of grapes, it's honey. So honey, yeast, water, and then for home brewers nowadays, we've got some extra stuff we add in there to make sure the yeast are happy and it all goes well. But basically, yeah, beer has a lot of steps. Wine's got a lot of testing and making sure it's right. Mead, you throw it in a jug, you shake it up, and you leave it, right?
Well, I would contend that redneck wine or Kunas wine is the easiest thing to brew, because I did that a couple of Christmases ago, and I didn't get fucked up, but it gave me a little buzz. It was just like Welch's and bread yeast.
I mean,
Yeah, it was fine.
People do that with apple cider too. just make homemade hard cider. You just throw some yeast in a jug and wait. Yeah. Yeah, no, and actually that's what I've been doing lately is it's called Sizer, which is mead with apple. So when you do it the easy way, you use apple cider, so it all breaks down and you don't have any chunks to get out of there. But sure. It's pretty tasty, man. You just throw a cinnamon stick after it's all done fermenting, and that's you're good to go.
I'm in. So I've never actually had mead, so I'm looking forward to having yours. That's why I think and we'll mention this next, because you made an order, like a special batch, I believe, right, for Childerberg. So I was one of the early buy-ins, I guess, here to help you get that going. So
yes,
I think my order was like just, I don't remember if I bought one bottle or two bottles or how it worked, but I know I wanted just like one the standard those. Plain mead.
Right.
Because I've never had it before, but I've wanted to try making it. I just haven't done it yet. And I've never brewed beer. Although I have some friends that do brew beer, and one of those friends actually gave me, well, I'll say it this way, just in case any feds are listening. One of those friends who brews beer, gave a friend of mine who we'll call John, a keg so that John could then fashion a riser and condenser. Cause John wants to, distill alcohol because John's a chemical engineer.
Okay, see, and if you stopped at the condenser, that would have been 100% legal.
Yeah, exactly.
And then you said alcohol.
Whatever, it's fine. I don't give a fuck.
No,
I mean, I'm gonna distill water or like essential herbs and oils.
Essential oils, yeah.
Yeah.
By the way, fine. Just as dangerous as whiskey, essential oils are.
Yeah. But,
you can actually buy a pot still for about $200 on Amazon. They're cheap. If you want a decent one, yeah, I think you got to go up to the 400 range.
Yeah, and, I don't trust China.
Right.
I don't want to put anything that I'm going to drink and put in my body next to heat from some Chinese vessel. So, sorry, I declined to do that. I thought about it, but so I mean, with the keg, it's like, you know, 15 gallons. So I'm like 10 gallons plus some headspace. And then it was like 60 or 80 bucks a copper.
Yeah,
some ancillary shit to, you know, fashion the rest of it.
I tell you what, just as a warning, since we're talking about distillation, anybody who's looking at YouTube and you see freezer distillation, just be really, really careful. Be careful, guys. That shit does not get rid of the methanol that distillation will get rid of in the heads, which is the first, I don't know, a couple jars of product you get.
Yeah, it's like a couple of percent of whatever the wash is.
Yeah, so freezer distillation doesn't get rid of that. Please be careful. Limit yourself to two shots. That's all I'm gonna say.
There you go.
Yeah, so basically I'm really excited for you guys to try this mead. I've been saying it on Instagram now that I'm banned from Twitter. that has been some of the best mead I've ever made. I tried a new yeast and it's fantastic. Your yeasts have an alcohol tolerance, which basically provides the maximum that you can get out of a brew. And then they have temperature requirements. And this one, 71B, happens to have wide temperature requirements, but a regular alcohol tolerance as opposed to like the champagne yeast, which goes really high. So instead of just burning all of the flavor out of the brew and shooting it up to 18%, it actually saves it. And this 5-gallon batch of traditional that I have coming down, it stopped right in the semi-sweet range. I didn't have to back sweeten it. It came out perfect on the first try, and it was clear, perfect, crystal clear. You could read the newspaper through it in 5 weeks.
That's awesome.
It blew my mind. You're not supposed to get mead that good in 5 weeks.
That was 71B, the yeast?
Yeah, 71B. Okay. That is the brand is Lalvin.
Yeah,
That I swear by it up and down. I will never stop using it now.
Nice.
But yeah, so aside from the 5-gallon traditional, which is just the plain honey flavor, I've also got 2 gallons of peach mead and 2 gallons of cranberry, and then a gallon of jalapeno, which I may have to make fresh because that last batch, I tell you what, you know how you get jalapenos at the grocery store and it's like playing Russian roulette?
Yep.
We lost.
Yeah.
So
see, the trick is take it from a Texan. And Jared, I don't know if you listen to the show or not, but if you are listening, since you grow jalapeno plants, and I'm expecting a Jared coin or jalapeno coin or whatever to come out of this.
I will invest in jalapeno coins so that he can invest in jalapeno mead.
I think one jalapeno coin is probably like 15 Bitcoin at this point. So it should be able to get you a lot of mead. If you're gonna consume the jalapenos, right, and you're using them like in a dish and you're trying to moderate heat, the more cracked they are is kind of a measure of the heat value there. So if it's nice and smooth, you're probably okay to like chop up a shit ton. But if you get some that are like cracked, like those are gonna be fucking hot. So just beware.
Okay, yeah, I've definitely noticed that, but I tell you what, these, I tried to get them just as normal as possible, and I always thought you could, you know, kind of run your nose along it and smell it, and that would give you an idea, and it really doesn't.
It's very deceptive.
Yes, very. So the original batch I did, I think I put 4 jalapenos in. It was just right. This one I put 5 because I was like, oh, maybe I can handle a little more. I tell you what, I should have dropped it down to 3 and then stepped it up if I needed to, because it was, whew. So yeah, if you like jalapenos, I'm going to have a couple of bottles of that, but I should have some fresh coming as well.
I'm definitely going to try it. I just, you know, I'm half Coonass and half Texan, so I like spicy shit, but I don't like jalapenos in my alcohol. Unless it's like vodka, right? Like jalapeno stuffed olives or something like that, like a dirty martini. But there's a local brewery here. And for a time they were doing jalapeno beer, and it was awful. Like it tasted like jalapenos, but it didn't taste like beer. It just tastes like you're drinking jalapenos, and it was super fucking hot. So it was just completely unenjoyable. Much, yeah.
I had, there's a local brewery up here, that did it seasonally last year, and I had it twice, and it wasn't too hot, but it definitely was just a novelty for me. It was more jalapeno than anything, but it wasn't overbearing at all. But this if I do it right with the mead, think of it like, so you've got honey and jalapenos, assuming it's not too hot. Have you ever had like a habanero or jalapeno jam?
Yeah.
That with like peaches and stuff.
Yeah.
It's kind of like that. It's kind of amazing.
Okay.
And really, if you do it right, so the honey will cut back on the spice and it will really just kind of hit you like a whiskey and then go down easy.
Nice. Yeah. So it's kind of like the idea of like putting that shit over like a cream cheese block or something like that.
Absolutely. There you go. And I'm going to try to do some food pairings with that, because that sounds amazing.
Nice. Nice. Well, I don't know how long I'm going to be able to stay at Childerberg this year. It's going to also kind of like be my first Childerberg, because the last one I got blackout drunk. I don't remember anything. So, but the problem this year is my daughters have ballet recital like right in the middle of it. So,
oh no,
it's going to be all fucked up. But yeah, I'm going to be there at any rate. And I'm excited to these food pairings. I'm not going to do any wine tours. I don't know if Jake has planned that again this year, but I'm going to try and hang around the campsite and hang out with the dudes and the dudettes that are there. So,
yeah, I don't know that he is, because the van is getting used for shuttling to and from the LNC.
Yes,
so
we have retired Vanguard, the wine van, and now it's going to be Chilldozer to go back and forth between the campsite and the LNC. So that should be fun. And I hope people pick up on that. Like people from outside of our group. That would be outstanding if people do pick up on that.
Right, yeah. Oh, man. I can't wait for the name to get out there a little bit more. You know, you've got Forkfest, I think people are kind of aware of now, but Childerberg would be the coolest thing ever, I think, especially since it literally got memed into existence.
Yeah. Well, I think the name is outstanding. And, you know, it's funny just because, like, you know, Robbie the Fire is like, he wears a shirt every now and then, right? And it's like, you hear kind of like random people kind of like mixing in, like, Childerberg. And especially now that the LNC is going to be right on top of it. You know, it's easy for somebody that has a little bit of reach to kind of drop it in and go, yeah, you're going to Childerberg. It's going to be the same time, same place. And I hope it takes off. I think it's going to be good.
Oh, yeah. I really think, well, because I don't know, how many people did we have the first year?
Oh, shit. 30-ish?
Yeah, that's what I thought. 30-ish is what I had heard. So I'm expecting, I mean, we've got to at least double it, right?
I think
with all the hype on Twitter and the fact that the LNC is going on at the same time, I think people will be nearby and it'll just be like a rotating door of people coming in.
Right,
and out.
Right, right. Yeah, I think probably the core group will probably be a little bit higher than 30. And then that like 30 last year wasn't people who were staying. I think maybe like 15 or 20 people stayed at the campsite.
Gotcha.
Because there were some like local to Austin, right, that were kind of in and out. I think again, I was fucking blackout drunk, so I have no idea. but that feels right. At least the people who were there in the morning. So I think it's got to be at least 30 who will be at least around the campgrounds at most of the time. And then, yeah, people who we can get in and out. And like, you know, the Lions Liberty guys, I think have mentioned it. If we can get any kind of traction with a bigger name like that, I think it would be outstanding. And kind of turn it, you know, into the Pork Fest of the South. And I don't know. I'm hopeful.
Yeah. I think, what we're even hopeful for, possible Scott Horton appearance this time.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he was supposed to come to the last one, I think, too.
He felt bad about that because I remember the last time he mentioned something about that. He was like, oh, yeah, I might do it this time.
Yeah, something came up. I'm sure Pete probably called him and said, dude, it's a fucking cult. Don't go. Because I think Pete tried to warn me because I recorded with him like right before I went. And he's like, dude, I heard it's a fucking cult. Don't do it. Which, you know, it's all tongue in cheek, guys. It's not a fucking cult, allegedly.
Right, allegedly,
bring,
yes.
Bring your hood.
And no, it's. I was posting in Fagcast one, or Fagforce one, and I said, "It's not a cult, Mom. It's an ice cream social."
That's outstanding.
That dude, needs to so be a T-shirt. I swear.
I think to couple with your mead and your fundraising efforts, which we need to talk about. You should make shirts that say that. Like, you should come up with a Gore Brewing shirts and the back should say, Mom, it's not a cult, it's an ice cream social.
So true. And then like a little baby Free Ross at the bottom.
Hell yeah. Yeah. So all the proceeds, or at least a good amount of the proceeds, tell me what's happening with these. What are you doing with that?
Well, okay, so what happened is because I wanted to get brewing in time to bring this down, and I was a little strapped for cash at the time. I hit up some buddies on Twitter, including you, mm-hmm. and we all decided we were going to pitch in a little bit of money to get the ingredients for this so I could actually bring it. I ended up getting some very generous donors, and so I've already got some overhead, and all profits, quote unquote, allegedly, are going to the freeross.org campaign. So I've already got over $100 because it's just extra. And I was like, well, I already bought all the bottles. I bought all the ingredients. Everything's going well. So we've got that much. We've got over 100 right now. And when we get there, I don't know, maybe I'll sell some Free Ross stickers. And if you have a sticker, I'll give you some brew. So
that's awesome.
That was kind of my idea. And then I was thinking just reporting the number to I'm not sure. I know they took the proceeds from last year, Jake and Carr did, mm-hmm. and turned it in. So I don't know if I should give it to them or just hold on and do it myself and give them the numbers. But I think it'd be really cool at the end of the camping trip to announce what we actually raised.
Yeah, I think that would be great.
Well, and I'm thinking too with the Chilldozer bus, you know, you get people coming in and out. They like they see that there's some guy selling novelty homebrew and some Free Ross good cause stuff. I mean, I may generate some cash here.
Yeah, yeah, no, I like the idea. I think you know, if we could get some kind of guerrilla marketing going on like that, it'd only help. So
I'm just gonna say this: I may along with a Free Ross banner along the table I set up, I may also have one that says Agorist Bake Sale. Because that's what it feels like.
That's awesome. That's outstanding. All right, so that's
the plan.
So what else do we have? What haven't we covered yet?
Well, we've talked a little bit about agorism, voting, brewing. Let's see. I don't know. I recently got a printer, and I printed off Max Stirner's The Ego and His Own, started that. So that may be coming up soon, a little book report.
Okay.
If anybody – do you know anything about that, Matt?
I don't know anything about that. So please enlighten me.
Okay. It's like the proto Ayn Rand philosophy, but she differs a lot. For one, Stirner was a straight-up anarchist, and he was calling it the state back in the mid-1800s. I'm trying to remember. There's another point, but I can't think of it off the top of my head. It's kind of interesting because it's like they translated it from German. So when you read it, you start understanding it, and then you go back to speaking English all day, and it's like, oh, no, yeah, the dialect is completely gone. So,
right.
But it's interesting. He seems to be railing against just any and all kinds of authority, down to the idea that your ideas are ruling you. It's interesting. It's like you take agorism, which is control of oneself in subversion of the state, and you make it a mental thing where you're like, no, I'm going to control my thoughts and not be subject to, you know, like Stirner kind of trash talks religion through the whole book and talking about, like, you know, that this is an idea that's ruling you. And so you have to get behind that and make it, basically make it your bitch, right?
You have to
make your thoughts your bitch, basically. So that's the most I'm going to try to describe it right now. I've had a long day. Probably not going to do it any more justice than that.
Well, it certainly seems like an interesting book. I mean, it sounds a little more, I guess, like objectivism, like proto-objectivism with some existentialism kind of mixed in.
Perhaps, yeah. So I guess here's one of the things is that, and it's gone. Dang it. Oh my gosh.
Fucking mead.
Right? Beer tonight. The rest of the mead that I have that is available is being saved for a Christmas party this weekend. So.
Ah, nice.
And that would be the first sizer I did.
Gotcha.
Which, I don't know if you saw those pictures. I started a second one up because I was so impressed, and the damn thing exploded all over the counter.
Oh, shit. I didn't see those pictures. Those get posted in Discord?
I ended up, they're in Instagram, but I could totally post the links. But when you go up to the max that the bucket will hold, it turns out you have to have room for all the foam.
Yes, yes. That's called headspace.
Yep. Yeah, there was zero, which is normally good, but,
Nice.
Yeah. So that's pretty much what's up with me these days.
Nice. All right. Well, so any plugs before we get out of here?
Sure. I am Agora Brewing on Instagram, formerly Chronic the Agorist Hedgehog on Twitter. You can catch me as Agora Brewing in the Biting the Bullet Discord and FagForce One. And check out the blog, which is agorabrewing.home.blog.
Awesome. And everybody, please check the show notes for all the links. I'll drop everything there. Please go check them out. Please support them. If you're going to Childerberg, buy some fucking mead, man, because everything's going to go to support the Free Ross campaign, I guess.
Yes, the Agorist King.
Yes. So that's it. Y'all know what to do. Tell your friends. Tell your mom. Download it. Share it. Download it to a USB drive and put it on a fucking carrier pigeon. We'll see y'all next week. Peace. Cross a 57 Chevy with a hillbilly band. Had a little honky-tonk filled with one-night stands. Take a telly on fire with a gonzo steel. In a doghouse space just to seal the deal. Yeah, top 40 country, better watch your back, 'cause this hot rod's faster than your Cadillac.